Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, in celebration of Valentine's Day, three of America's leading romance writers talk about how they write love stories and the love stories that inspired them. This program originally took place May 19th, 2024, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Good afternoon. My name is Noelle Velasco, and I'm the Education Program Coordinator at the American Writers Museum. I'd like to welcome you all to our first of our programs at the second American Writers Festival. Our programs this afternoon focus on genre, fiction, and other types of writing, and we begin with a love story. Romance novels are some of the most widely read books in the world. Thanks to networks of readers, booksellers, and writers, the romance genre has never been more vibrant or powerful. Today, we're going to hear from three authors of new romances about how and why they write their love stories. Claire LeGrand is the New York Times best-selling author of 12 novels, including Imperium Trilogy, A Crown of Ivy and Glass, and the forthcoming A Song of Ash and Moonlight. Swan Huntley's novels include I Want You More, Getting Clean with Stevie Green, The Goddesses, and We Could Be Beautiful. Zio Axelrod is a USA Today best-selling author of contemporary fiction and romance. Her latest book is Girls with Bad Reputations. This panel is moderated by Pamela Knight, past president of the Chicago North Romance Writers and chair of its biennial conference. Welcome to you all.
Okay, Zio, sing us a song. Here we go.
Hello and welcome.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I'm very excited about this panel, which is going to, and I'm going to try to stick to the subject matter, which is writing love stories. And as Noelle explained, romance is a specific type of genre where there's a happily ever after or a happy for now. But love stories can be filtered through many different types of books, and that's what our panel is going to try and help you with today. So if you're a writer here or an aspiring writer and you are looking for some direction on how to weave a love story through your book, no matter the genre, looking at you, Swan, then you're in the right place. So. All right, let's get right to my questions. So, as I said, love stories add dimension to storytelling, and even books that aren't considered romance, like The Lord of the Rings, the James Bond novels. There's always a story, a love story, weaved through there. Now, I would like to start by asking the panel, and I'm going to start with you, Zio, and even though you're writing traditional romance, but can you talk to me about some of your other works, because you do also have other stories, where perhaps the love story is not the overarching theme of the book.
It's interesting because this series, the Lily series, with the first book is The Girl with Stars in Her Eyes, Girls with Bad Reputations, this book too, is centered on an all-female rock band. So at its heart, the series is about the journey of the band in the music industry.
Right.
And then alongside that, in both books, there's a romance. So they kind of, I think, carry equal weight in the
right.
book. But there also is a different kind of love story in it, in that the musicians themselves are falling in love with their craft and with their bandmates. Because I read a lot about found family,
right.
which is a different kind of love story. And so, like, in the first book, you know, she really does not want to be in this world, and she falls in love with the world. She falls in love with her bandmates and realizes that there are people that can understand her passion for music. You know, they get her.
Yes.
You know? So there's like a dual love story of her falling in love with them and falling in love with her love interest. But I didn't read romance until I accidentally wrote one. and I had sort of like poo-pooed romance as like, you know, my grandmother's thing or whatever, but I realized in all the properties that I did love and read and watch, I always gravitated towards whatever the love story was.
Yeah.
You know, and I watch a lot of sci-fi and fantasy. I've read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, but I always wanted to, like, those two have to get together. You know, and if they didn't, I got angry. So it's always been a part of my storytelling. I just didn't realize that how big a part until I started writing.
That's absolutely. I mean, who doesn't? I mean, even the fandoms, everybody's shipping somebody.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
So love is important. Now, Ms. Claire, let's go over to you and talk about the Ashbournes.
First of all, thanks for being here today, everybody. I was so excited for this panel. My latest books is a trilogy, the Middlemist trilogy, and the first book, A Crown of Ivy and Glass, came out last year, and book two, A Song of Ash and Moonlight, comes out in September. These books, I mean, there are many different ways to interpret romantasy, but these books are romantic fantasy, so I would say this series is equal parts romance and fantasy. It's kind of like the vibe is Bridgerton if it had magic and monsters and was written by one of the Bronte sisters. So it's like it's like gothic romance meets high fantasy. And before this series, I had written young adult epic fantasy, middle grade fantasy, middle grade horror, young adult horror, and in each of those books, regardless of the genre or the audience, I had romantic components. Even if it was children's books, there were first crushes and gasp, holding hands. And I'm like you, I'm primarily a fantasy writer, but regardless of the genre of what I'm reading or writing, I always gravitate toward the romances. With this series, I thought, what about actually having a happy ending for once? Because that is not guaranteed in my other books. The Imperium trilogy is what I'm best known for. It's young adult epic fantasy, and the romances are a huge part of that story.
Yes.
But happily ever after is not necessarily guaranteed. So I wanted to try something new with this series and still have all the fantasy and like horror adjacent stuff that I love, but try to give them actually a happy ending this time.
And I'm going to ask you a follow-up question. Was it more difficult to write your latest series as opposed to the YA series?
You know, my YA books are very, very upper YA, so it's been a pretty natural transition to the adult space. I would say that it was a challenge for me. It was more of a challenge for me to write a happy ending than it was to write a tragic ending.
Really?
I'm a tragic girly. I love the bittersweet endings. I love the messy endings. I love the tragic endings. And so figuring out, as we were discussing last night, figuring out how to write a story with really compelling stakes, mm-hmm. but it ends with a happily ever after or a happily for now, that was a new challenge for me and something that made me appreciate the genre of romance even more than I already did.
Okay, and that's a great segue into Swan.
I mean, yeah, this is so true that I think most stories contain a love story within them. And my first novel it's a psychological thriller, and it's set up so that you think it's going to be a story about one relationship, and it ends up being sort of a story about another relationship. So it does have a love story in it. The second one contains, I would say it's a friendship love story. The third one fits more into like a rom-com category. It's not completely about that. It's about somebody who's grappling with alcoholism and with coming out, but it has like the structure of a rom-com. And then this one, what did you just say it was? It's like a thriller love story. You had a better way of saying this.
I'm going to let you tell them about what your book is, but
it's a dark love story.
It's a twisty. It has a twist ending. It's love as a weapon, I think.
That's good. That's
going to the top of my TBR.
Yes. So, and now that's a great seg into my next question here, which we talked about different types of love: familial, romantic relationships, friendships, obsessive love, unrequited, and how do you decide that that's the direction that you're going to take these characters in?
I think my characters decide. They kind of, like we were talking about this last night, I'm not a plotter.
Okay.
So my characters wander into my head, you know, sometimes fully formed, and I get to know them, and then I have to decide, or they tell me who they would fall for, you know what I mean? So it's like, what kind of love is it that's going to make them happy?
Yeah. And I basically do the same thing, but I am a plotter, so I plot everything out from beginning to end before I start writing. But I'm thinking, I don't know how you do what you do. It's fascinating to me. But I'm thinking the same thing. Like, who is this character, and what is their journey going to be? What do they need to learn as an individual, and how can a romance help them grow stronger and learn the thing that they need to learn? And then I craft the love interest based on that. And just because I plan it out from the beginning doesn't mean it doesn't change a lot while.
Characters have minds of their own.
They really do, yeah.
I would say that my process is a marriage of both of yours. I plot out, but not in incredible detail, mm-hmm. but I do have like a roadmap of where I'm going, and that took me a while to understand that I needed to start doing that. I actually wrote two novels that are still on my computer because I didn't outline them. And then I finally got really mad and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to write an outline. And then everything happened very quickly. Mm-hmm. Side note. So I do that, but then I always realize, I don't know, halfway through or three-fourths of the way through that my characters are not where I thought they were going to be emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so then I kind of change it. And so that's my way of saying, like, yeah, the characters are determining what happens, but I do know what the ending is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think with this book, I knew that the theme of love needed to be tied to the job of the main character, which is she's a ghostwriter. And in order to be a ghostwriter, you need to pretend to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it's like a perfect setup for kind of a single white female identity melding confusion.
You know, and then that leads me to another question here I had about language and word choices and the expertise and competency that all of you bring to your books, but then how do you translate that to your characters, and how does that also then contribute to their emotional arcs, which will also help with the love story? That was a really long question, wasn't it? Man.
So like how we use language to help develop the characters,
yes,
and tell their story?
Yes. Mm.
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It's one for me.
Yeah. Okay. The thing that comes to mind for me first is I always write in the first person because I think I'm just really interested in the theme of denial and know a lot about that as, you know, personally. So I'm always thinking about how much information to dole out and and what the space is between what the main character is telling you and what is true. So, you know, I might be holding back with the language in certain moments. Like there's a restraint of language and of information.
So I used to be a musician. I was a trumpet player, and so music is a huge part of my process, and I definitely feel like rhythm and phrasing and the lyricism of language is something that I focus on a lot in the brainstorming stage when I'm trying to figure out what voice this book needs, what voice this character needs. So I use a lot of like actual music. I built playlists that help me plot out the book, and then that music informs, if the music feels like what I want the book to feel like, then the music then informs what the voice of the book, what the voice of the character is going to be, what the rhythm is. If you were to read one of my YA horror books out loud, and then you were to read this book out loud, the internal rhythm of each language choice would be very different, and it would suit to the story that it belongs to. So that's a part of my process.
Everything that Claire just said. Well, because I'm a songwriter, I'm a singer and a songwriter, okay. And so I write pretty lyrically, and each character has its own cadence and rhythm, mm-hmm. and the dialogue, you can see it in the dialogue. I don't know if you can tell from book to book. I didn't think about that. I'm going to read two of my books back to back and see if that works. But yeah, music, I'm a mellophile, so music is always in my head. So I create playlists that I have personally for books, and then I have ones that I release that readers can enjoy. That's like 12 songs instead of the 400 that I have for the series. But yeah, it's how I'm always listening to the rhythm of how people speak and how they speak to each other, the rhythm of conversations, whether it's a good conversation or a difficult conversation, that changes the rhythm. So yeah, I think in terms of like language choice, it has more to do with rhythm, but also I try to give my characters their own quirks when it comes to how they speak. Mm-hmm. I try not to give them all the same sort of like speaking rhythms and speaking, you know, idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I think I do the same thing. Like, if a character, like the main character of this book is just very angry and prickly and repressed. And so her, the way she speaks and the way she thinks is, it's kind of jabby.
Yeah,
you know, it's,
yeah,
it's thorny language. It's sharp and a little uncomfortable. Whereas another character who is more comfortable in her own skin might have a more of a fluidity to,
yep,
how she thinks and speaks. So I, yeah, totally resonate with what you're,
well,
saying.
All four, yeah, members of the Lilies are completely different people.
Yeah.
Lily herself, who, that's the last book in the series, she's very stoic. She's Norwegian. And she's very stoic. And in the first book, she doesn't say very much at all. And I've had readers say, like, she barely spoke, but I really want to know her, you know? And so she speaks a little bit more in this one, and you're getting to know her. I'm getting to know her. But she says so little that everything that she says has to have meaning and impact,
yeah,
you know? So,
yeah,
that's a great question.
Okay, and those were great answers. Thank you. So now, let's also talk about, like I said, I want to keep us on message here. So let's talk about themes and how they're integral to love stories. Mm-hmm. And then also tell me what comes first, your plot or your character, even though I think you guys kind of, you dabbled there a little bit in that, but can you talk a little bit more about that?
Character comes first, because I'll have characters, like Lily, she was the first character from the Lilies that came to me, even though she's not the, she's the last book, but she was the first one, and that was years ago. She just popped up and sort of introduced herself, and I was like, yeah, I'll get to you one day. But in terms of thematically, I like romance in particular because it gives you an opportunity to see anyone from any background, any hardship, any life trauma, find their joy at the end of the book. And that's the challenge of it. I think some people dismiss romance because they think it's easy to write, because, oh yeah, people fall in love and it's happily ever after. But if you're putting your characters through the mill, you know, like you're giving them every, you're throwing everything at them, whether it's, you know, monsters and dragons or, you know, life, and they still find their joy at the end. And I think now we're in a space where more people are seeing themselves in these books and seeing their stories end happily. And I love, you know, writing, you know, black women finding joy. That's one of my things that I really love doing. But yeah, romance for me is the theme of it for me in general. Just, I mean, yes, you can break it down, but for me it's fine, everyone being able to find their AGA.
I guess I start with this book, I started with a situation. The original seed for this idea was planted when I was writing a book. I was writing the memoirs of a Real Housewife of New York City. And she said to me during this process, you're coming to my manor October 21. This was like the height of the pandemic, and she wanted me to come to her manor to...
She says, you're coming to my manor.
Yeah, this is a direct quote.
Sounds kind of sinister.
Direct.
And she
exactly. She's like, you're coming to my manor October 21. She wanted me to watch her do her photo shoot for her book. And I thought, A, I'd rather sleep in a box, and B, that's a really good setup. You know, what if I had gone to her manor and then we were just in this manor together? Like, what could happen? So that was the original idea for this book.
A lot.
I love that. That's such a great origin story. It depends on the book for me, what comes first, the character or the concept. This one was kind of both at the same time, I guess. And one of the things that I like to do in all of my books, not just my romance, is have characters who are dealing with like mental health challenges, and they still, in these books at least, they still get their happily ever afters. That was one of my main motivations for writing this series. I wanted to write a sweeping fantasy story with all the wonderful trimmings and the masquerade balls and the steamy scenes, and have characters who are at the same time dealing with things like anxiety and depression, chronic pain, unresolved childhood trauma, but they still get the happily ever afters they deserve. Mm-hmm. So I knew that that's going into it. I wanted this series to be that. And then at the same time, I was thinking, okay, so if that's what the basic concept of and inspiration behind these books is, what are the challenges that each sister, because each sister has her book, what are the challenges that each sister is dealing with, and how does that inform her story and her romance, and how does that fit into the larger plot of all three books?
Yeah, similar with the Lilies, like each member of the band is coming from a different background. And, you know, in this book, Kayla's carrying secrets that they didn't know, you know, so it's like she's sort of straddling two lives. So it's really interesting in how that informs the band, how it affects their music, how it affects their performances, like all of that stuff.
Well, thank you. You two just went straight through a question that I had, because I was going to ask you about how do you balance the mental health challenges of your characters. And, I mean, we had Tony and Seb and Kayla and Ty and Gemma and absolutely Zara and Jane. So so it's a good that you already answered that for me. So, but if you would like to go through that specifically, because it was sort of tangential there, but if you want to specifically talk about, and I think Claire did. Claire just gave us the.
Sorry, I. I jumped ahead and looked
That's okay. That's great. But you spoke about the mental health challenges, and that everyone, no matter their mental health issue, deserves a romance, a love story. So anything more to add to that?
You're putting characters, like I said before, through pretty traumatic events. There's a lot going on in Girls with Bad Reputations. They're both from different areas of the economic stratosphere, and you know she's coming from a place of privilege, and he's coming from a place of underprivilege, and he's been accused of something that has derailed his whole life, and she's got a lot of pressure on her to perform to her mother's standards, and so they're at this crossroads. So they're dealing with microaggressions and racism and misogyny and all these things that the band, as four attractive women, are dealing with. Three of the band members are women of color, so they're dealing with an extra layer of it, you know, so trying to weave all of that in with all of the funny banter and, like, friendship with the band and the love story with Kayla and Ty, it's a juggling act for sure. Like, I'm sure that you're trying to find that line when you're writing, like, difficult situations or difficult, you know, characteristics for a character with finding their joy. You have to, like, thread that needle pretty finely, you know.
Yes. I feel like I've already talked a lot about this, so I'm going to let you.
I mean, everybody should be represented, you know, of course. So whether somebody's mentally ill or whether it's, you know, any other thing. And I think we're all kind of mentally ill when it comes to love. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, like, projecting.
Write
going
that
on,
down.
Right? My therapist told me once, she's like, we're living in a ghost world. Like, everybody is just like a ghost of your past, and you're projecting stuff onto them. So that's what I'm thinking about as I write.
Oh, I love that.
Okay. Do you get those questions where they're like, why do you write diverse characters so diversely in your books? And you're like, because that's the world that I live in? Like, why wouldn't I have representation in there? But yeah.
Right. Okay, so I think we'll move on to world building. Mm. And I'm going to start with Claire, because there's some serious world building in this book, which is expected of fantasy romance, but you do it really well.
Thank you. I didn't tell her to say that.
She did not. She's never met me before an hour ago, but all of you do. I mean, and my idea here is that the world building can be something different. It does not have to be you building a system of magic or you doing this or building a world, because Zeal's built a world with the band and her characters, and Swan has built a world with the ghostwriter and the crazy food TV lady. Because once you can immerse yourself in that, and that's what, as writers, we're all hoping to do, is to build a world that will entice the readers so that they are willing to come and sit down, take a chair, and listen to the story of the person that inhabits it. So talk to me a little bit about your process of world building.
My world building process is very messy. Once I get to the part where I'm outlining the book, that's very tidy and full of spreadsheets. But before then, when I'm building the world, for me, it involves a lot of textural building. So what do I want this world to feel like, sound like, look like, smell like? So when I do school visits, I talk to the kids about, let's take the five senses, and if you're building a world, whether it's fantastical or realistic, if you're walking down a street in that world, you know, what scents are you picking up? What kind of food do people eat there? And what does the choice of food tell you about, like, the way the economy works in that world and the systems of agriculture? And when you're walking down a street in this world, what do you hear? Like, what are people talking about? What kind of music is playing? So I do a lot of just kind of messy brainstorming to build the texture of the world using the five senses. And at the same time, I'm thinking about my original concept and the characters I'm building and just how it all fits together to serve the main story, which is the main character going through their journey, whatever that journey is.
I'm just so interested, again, in point of view. So because all my books are told in first person, I'm interested in how the main character is absorbing the world around them and what that tells us about them. So as an example, Zara sees some fireflies in, like, the beginning of this book, and she's like, they look like little apostrophes to me. You know, that's the dance that they're doing, and that's because she's a writer. And her dad has just died, and so she's seeing him in things. So back to my point about how we live in a ghost world, we're just projecting our realities onto everything. That is what I'm most interested in. Somebody said that readers remember smells the most. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know how somebody would measure that information. But that's something that I think about. I'm like, oh, I'm going to add, like, a smell on this page. You know, and I don't like to overdo that in my world building.
My world building is entirely selfish. Well, with the music, I try to invite the reader into the music world that I live in and try to give them some sense of immediacy and, like, they understand it. I don't want to throw too many technical things at them, stuff like that. I want them to feel like they're there. But I'm also a big fandom person. I love fandom. So I basically created my own fan. I have stickers on the back of my phone. These are my characters on the back. I wanted to create something that I could have t-shirts for and playlists for. And, you know, the band has its own social media. I record music as the band. Like, I wanted to create my own world so that I could play in it. That was really the only reason that I did it. And you guys can come in too, but it's really for me. So I'm so selfish about that.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That's amazing. Okay, and so then I'm going to shift to a quick question. How do you decide your point of view? And we'll start with Zeal here because we've already picked on Swan enough.
It really does come down to character. If the character comes to me speaking to me in the first person, that's how I write it. If it's like so and so walked into a room, then I know that we're in third POV. But yeah, it really does come down to character. And I know that there's debate among readers whether or not they like reading in first or third. And I think it depends on the subgenre. Like, some subgenres they only read in first. But really, for me, it's what I'm comfortable writing in for character.
I think for me it is a matter of what the genre is. Mm-hmm. So for, like, my epic fantasy, which is a big sprawling story and multiple POVs, I wrote in third person because I felt like that is what fit the story best and the genre best. Mm-hmm. But for this, which is romantic fantasy, and it's so focused on the internal journeys of these three characters, it's still a sprawling story, but it's told from this sort of intimate perspective. So to me, it just made sense to write in first person because, especially with the mental health component, like, we want to really be with these characters as they're going through what they're going through, and first person provides that immediacy. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I always write in first person, as I said, and I agree with what Claire just said. You know, writing fiction is about putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, and I think first person is the most direct way to do that. It also, you know, matters where it puts your brain as a writer. That's what really matters. So a lot of people read, and they read first person as the same as a really close third. Like, you can ask somebody, what was that book, and they might not be able to differentiate between those two.
That's true.
But for me, when I start writing in third, I feel more judgmental of my character, and I feel like I'm farther away from my character than I want to be. And so that's why it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, we've got 5 minutes, so we're going to do the lightning round here. Okay, ladies, buckle up. Here we go. All right. Favorite craft book?
Story by Robert McKee. It's a screenwriting book. It's fantastic.
I'm going to go with a really early one, Plot by Nan Dibble.
Bird by Bird, Anne Lamott, Shitty First Drafts, that essay in it.
Lisa Cron, Story Genius. Okay, and your favorite characters of your many characters right now? Which is your favorite baby right now?
Out of all of them?
Out of all of them.
One of the main characters in my YA epic fantasy trilogy, Riel. She is my favorite character, I think, out of everyone I've written. She's pure chaos. She just poured out of me. She was great fun to write.
Zara Pines, the protagonist of my forthcoming novel. Also, it's a full sentence. Zara Pines. There's meant to be meaning in that.
Ooh, okay. Clever. I know I should say Kayla because she's, you know, but it's Ty. Her love interest, Ty. He walked into my head fully formed with his grandfather, Pop-Pop. They came in as a duo. Ty is my pansexual cinnamon roll, took a job driving a bus so that he could read more. I just love him so much.
Oh, I love him too now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't get to talk to ask Swan about how her illustrating, because she's also an illustrator, and you know that the other two are musicians, and we're going to get to you, but quickly here, I'd like to have Swan talk a little bit how your illustration background also informs your novel writing.
Ooh, okay. It's funny because, you know, segueing off what I just said about, like, how different brains come forth when I go in different voices, it's the same with illustration. Like, when I started writing these gift books, so there's one actually coming out on June 11th. It's called You're Grounded, an anti-self-help book to calm you the fuck down. And it features me as, like, a stick bird person. I'm so stoked. I can't believe somebody's paying me to do this. I mean, it's ridiculous. But I basically, it's like an interactive journal, so I take you through how to get grounded. That sounds lame, but it's like hopefully not lame and hopefully not annoying. And yeah, that was just an unexpected turn that my career took. I don't know that we have time to go into that, so I'll end there.
You're amazing.
I am.
Stop.
Okay, so Miss Musician Lady, tell us about it. Talking to you, Zio, and then I'm going to get to Claire.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I mean, I guess the transition from... I was on the road with my band, bored after a gig in Portugal at 3 o'clock in the morning and couldn't sleep and started writing on my Tumblr blog. And it was just sort of like... I guess I just wrote moment in time kind of thing. So I didn't have world building of any of that, and there was just two people talking. So it was just lyrics, but in dialogue. And then people kept asking for more. And so like 9 months and 200,000 words later, I had this huge thing that I didn't know what to do with. But yeah, the transition was a little bit easier because I eased into it with no thought to publishing.
Okay.
So it wasn't super hard.
So yeah, I used to be a musician and I decided that I wanted to be a writer instead for many reasons. One of which is that it's really, really hard to make a living as a musician. I think even more so than making a living as a writer, and I didn't want that gig life, and I probably wasn't gonna, you know, get into the New York Philharmonic like I wanted to. So I decided that, and I got an idea for a book, and I just was obsessive about it, and I got into writing. But music has remained a huge part of my life and my creative process. And I'm really thankful for that experience because I think it enriches my current craft.
Okay, well, I think Noelle is wrapping us up, so thank you all for coming. Thank you to the panel for all of your wonderful, thoughtful responses to my questions.
Thank you for those great questions.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.